Well, Sharon Evans, who's the chief executive of DotCom, that's a child abuse prevention charity that works in schools, sat on the panel and joins me now. Very good afternoon to you. Thanks for coming in. Let's start at the beginning. Tell us exactly what a public inquiry is.
Well, a public inquiry is set up, as far as I understood when I became a panel member, to be able to get to the bottom of the truth of what happens when there's a disaster or there's a very serious issue facing a country. And we were appointed as panel members and promised that this inquiry, the child abuse inquiry, would be open. I'm a journalist, although I now run the charity, and part of what I was asked was to be on the panel so that I could be a public face and I could speak publicly about things that were happening. But what actually happened, and the reason that I'm speaking out now, is that we were asked to sign contracts that were created by the Home Office, and obviously you need to sign the contract to be part of the panel.
The contract presumably is to ensure that you are discreet while the inquiry goes ahead, I imagine.
Absolutely. There's a clause in the contract that says, of course, you're not allowed to give any information out publicly. And then they got us to sign a collective responsibility agreement, which said that basically that a majority of the panel had to agree if we released information. But in actual fact, that was both of those things in conjunction were used to keep everybody quiet about the way the panel and the way the inquiry was being run. It should have been about protecting evidence, protecting witnesses, and making sure that legal cases were properly dealt with, but that was not how it was used.
What threats did you receive? What sanctions were suggested if you spoke out?
Well, it became very clear to myself and Graham when we went round to listening meetings, and we were being given very serious allegations about very public figures, which we took back to the inquiry, and nothing was being done about it. Months in, they couldn't actually tell us how the information was going to be used. And I was chairing the panel on one day, and I suggested that we wrote to Theresa May, who was the Home Secretary, to express our concerns. At the end of the day, I was taken to one side, and it was made clear to me. This is what I was told, that 2 years ago that Theresa May was going to be the Prime Minister, that this inquiry was going to be part of this, and that if I didn't toe the line and do as I was told, if I tried to get information out, that I would be discredited by her
But
advisers.
nobody knew Theresa May was going to be Prime Minister 2 years ago. So who was it who told you that Theresa May would be Prime Minister?
It was the QC to the inquiry
Well,
who was Ben Emmerson, who was her advisor. I mean, he was the go-between between the Home Office and the Home Secretary and the panel.
Well, she wanted to be Prime Minister, but what politician doesn't want to be Prime Minister? But there's no way of guaranteeing that she would. Of course, everyone thought George Osborne was going to be Prime Minister 2 years ago. You left the inquiry. What was the final tipping point for you?
I'm an abuse survivor myself, as well as being a journalist, and I thought that being on this panel, it was extremely important that we would be uncovering great wrongs and making a difference and changing things. It was so obvious that everything was about the control and suppression of information. And we were also promised that the inquiry was independent. And, you know, when you have Home Office contracts and everything was run by the Home Office, there was no independence. But in fact, it was the Home Secretary who decided, having said that survivors would be at the heart of this inquiry, that after 8 or 9 months, decided that survivors wouldn't be at the heart of the inquiry.
So
So, you know.
who was it that you think who wanted to suppress information?
My belief is that it was the Home Office. We have, I mean, I have got a document. It's 23 pages of when I appeared in front of the Home Affairs Select Committee, which should be where you openly and honestly answer the questions and challenges of MPs.
Yeah, because you can say what you like.
But you have privilege, but not only that, you know, it's actually an offence not to tell the truth to a parliamentary committee.
I know, I sat in one.
Did you? Yes, so you know how scary it is. They provided me with a 23-page document that told me exactly what I may and may not say to the parliamentary committee. And for me, that
What were
was.
you not allowed to say to the parliamentary committee?
There were lots of things that said we had to answer. This is a matter for the Home Office. It was, I mean, they gave us key questions like, you know, whether we were making statements publicly, have we started taking evidence, what was the quality of the listening meetings, and to every single one of those questions they provided an answer, which they said in the briefing that at their advice was that we may use our own words and phraseology, but we must give these answers.
Yeah, because you're entitled to say whatever you like, obviously. I know that because I sat on the committee that people are prepared very carefully for these committee hearings. MPs are prepared for them. MPs sometimes get questions written for them by the clerks of the committee. But people who sit at the committee as witnesses are expected, as you say, to tell the truth and to give honest answers.
Well, I was so alarmed by this document. Because I'm a journalist, I know the importance of those committees, that I actually went to the clerk of the committee and said that I fear that I may not be able to tell the truth because I have been told what I may and may not say.
Now, that's interesting. What did the clerk of the committee say when you said that?
He was horrified and he went and got Keith Vaz, who was the chair, and he told me that I must tell the truth and that I must provide this document to the Home Affairs Select Committee. So that's what happened. But
Keith Vaz, of course, had to resign from the committee after, how can one put it gently, very unfortunate circumstances.
Yes, and very concerning.
Concerning his own private life, as you know. Your advice to the Grenfell panel members, therefore, is that this may not be a straightforward inquiry that reveals all the information in the way that they perhaps hope. But I get the impression that there's a lot of suspicion about Grenfell before it even starts.
Well, I think from what I've been hearing, that people are already being encouraged to come and give information informally. And this is how we started on the child abuse inquiry. But the thing is, it seems to me it's exactly the same. I want to try to stop them going down the same road where they're controlled and information is suppressed, because when there's an inquiry, they can gather all the information and then they can choose what is released. And that is what I think is extremely dangerous in this case.
Now, there's another big story today, we know, with the police paying £10,000 to an informant, a paedophile informant, to provide information which has secured prosecutions. As an abuse survivor yourself, do you think that that's an acceptable way for the police to behave? Is it acceptable for the police to hand over money if at the end of the day it delivers convictions?
I can understand the position that the police have taken on this, but personally, as a survivor myself and having spoken to many survivors and victims across the country, the idea of the police paying £10,000 to a person who has raped children is absolutely abhorrent, and there must be other ways for them to get information. And I think it is also indicative of the way the police are run down, because police can go undercover and can get information. But also, when I was on the inquiry, what I saw firsthand is that there is a real lack of support for victims coming forward. So what we need is a greater wraparound support to encourage victims to come forward, because that is really what worked with the Jimmy Savile. It was the weight of the people coming forward to give information. That's what we should be looking for in these inquiries, not paying paedophiles thousands of pounds.
In this particular circumstance, there are literally hundreds of people now who've come forward and been identified as victims of these largely Asian gangs. And Sarah Champion has come out today saying we've got to be more direct and more blunt and find out why certain communities are seeing such an explosion of paedophile abuse. What do you think one can do now to help these children who are the victims of these gangs recover normal lives and some semblance of their remaining childhood?
That is the real problem, and it's what I saw firsthand on the inquiry, is that when victims do come forward, there is very little support for them. You can't just go to the doctor and get counselling, and obviously support groups are very much squeezed in terms of what they can provide. For me, my personal passion, which is why I'm working in schools, is that the earlier we can give children the skills to speak up if they are going through any of these issues, then the less damage that is going to be done and the more likely we are to be able to convict paedophiles. But I think we have a massive problem in this country. I speak openly about the fact that I was abused, and people still find that very shocking. because we are somehow supposed to be ashamed that this crime has happened to us. So we need to change this whole culture of keeping the secret and being complicit in covering up for these people.
Is it that you're meant to be ashamed, or is it just a very human thing that if you say that to people, they don't always know what to say in response? They're embarrassed.
I think there obviously is the human reaction of people being embarrassed. But I know, because I speak myself, every time I speak, I have a queue of people coming to disclose to me, and they've never told anybody before. So what I'm saying is, we, a bit like with the domestic violence cause, we need to stop the stigma. And also, when you're an abuse victim, the minute you say this happened to me, you are treated in a way that you're not in any other crime, as if you're a liar and it needs to be proved, and the poor person that you've alleged this against. So it's everything needs to be really seriously looked at.
In Scotland, the Scottish Government has established a scheme called the Named Person Scheme, which you probably heard of, where every school kid has a named person. That's effectively an authority figure, because sometimes, of course, they might be being abused in the home or by even a more distant relative. And the idea is that there should be a go-to person for every kid, and it's often the head teacher, and every child knows that if he or she is upset about something that's embarrassing, something they don't feel that they can necessarily talk about at home, there is someone for them to go to. The scheme has been widely welcomed by charities. It's been attacked by some of the opposition parties for reasons that aren't entirely clear always. Does this scheme, do you think, have a value? Could it be expanded south of the border?
I think the thought process behind the scheme has a value. The .com programme is based around a cartoon character called .com, who is a friend to children, and each child gets their own journal in which they can write or draw about their feelings. So this gives the child a direct way to disclose, and we have had last year a case go to Crown Court where a child disclosed during one of our lessons. So we know that this works.
That it works.
And this is what, as well as people need to be brought to account, there is no question of it, but alongside that needs to be the prevention.